It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast at MLB.com. I'm your host, Dylan Higgins, joined by my co-host, Fred Zinke. Fred, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm doing pretty okay. Pretty okay. We are recording an episode for Thursday, August 20th, and we're going to catch up on the last week of fantasy baseball news going on and stuff coming up pretty soon. We're actually recording on Wednesday, the 19th, and the breaking news today is, after we recently heard Chase Utley wasn't going to go anywhere, was going to sit tight, looks like he is actually on the move to Los Angeles.
Yeah, you know, and we talked last week that, you know, if Utley did move, it might be, that might be more of a situation where he squashes someone else's fantasy value more so than, you know, than he establishes his own value. And I think that might be the case because Enrique Hernandez was starting to look like a nice, you know, deep league play or a sleeper. And now, you know, that Utley's going to the Dodgers, he'll probably get most of the starts at second base until Kendrick comes back, Hernandez back to a utility role, or who knows, maybe even to the minors. And, you know, that kind of squashes him for deep mixed leagues.
Yeah. It's like, how could the Dodgers infield get even more convoluted and messy? And they traded for a second baseman that should play plenty. Yeah. Does this do anything for Utley's value for you?
I don't think much. You know, maybe they hit him. They have been hitting Hernandez sometimes second in the lineup in recent games. So, I mean, if they're going to hit Utley second in the lineup, you know, a few days a week until Kendrick's back, you know, next month, probably, I'm assuming he'll be out till next month, then maybe he could, you know, maybe deep mixed leagues. I don't even know if 15 team mixed leagues, if it's worth it. That's, you know, not a great park for hitters and he doesn't steal bases anymore. So
right.
I think he's stays on waivers in mixed leagues.
They'd have to really come out and say he's going to play every day. He's our everyday second baseman. I'm not sure they're going to do that with him. They like
to make sense. And they can't really do it when Kendrick comes back because he's going to need to go back in the lineup. So.
Yeah. So
any value would be short-lived.
Yep. And yeah, the main one affected is Enrique Hernandez, which is too bad because he was making himself a pretty interesting player when he plays. He's been good. But there goes that usefulness, at least while he's not playing most of the week. Does this do anything for you in Philadelphia? It kind of clears things up a little bit. And, we'll talk here in a bit about some injuries, including Michael Franco going down, but there's a lot of playing time to be had in Philadelphia all of a sudden.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, with Franco going out, you already had extra room there. I know, Cesar Hernandez started at third base against the Blue Jays yesterday. So, you know, they already had room to keep him in the lineup every day. I don't think it really clears up much in the sense of, you know, Hernandez could play second now and they can just mix and match at third. But I don't think anyone who plays third is going to help someone in mixed league.
No, it's really probably not worth your attention that much. I mean, I was looking, Andres Blanco might get more at bats. Nobody that really is going to matter to you in most formats in Philadelphia in what's already a struggling lineup. So, most of the changes over there in LA. The other big news coming out of Wednesday, Aaron Hicks is going on the disabled list, hurt himself in the game, which is unfortunate. That's too bad, but it did not take long for them to decide. Byron Buxton coming right back up. Yeah, he got sent down a little while ago after he came off the disabled list, but he's back. Are you excited about Byron Buxton?
If I need steals, then I am. Yeah. If I don't need steals, then I'm probably not that excited. I think his batting average, you know, will be really iffy down the stretch. But if you need steals, then for sure. And I think it'll depend on where they hit him in the lineup. They hit him, if I remember correctly, they hit him ninth a lot, you know, in his brief trial before he was injured. If they keep doing that, then he's not maybe a great play. He's kind of more of a one-category guy for fantasy owners. But if they were to put him at the top of the lineup, and Brian Dozier hasn't hit well in the second half, so, you know, if they decide they want to shake things up, put Buxton at the top of the lineup, put Dozier second, or if they fall out of the race at some point and decide, you know what, let's let the kid go as a leadoff hitter for the rest of the season, you know, then I'm a little more interested.
Yeah. Obviously, he has immense potential, and we haven't seen him put it together yet, and so he's worth a flyer in most formats, you know, because you never know when a guy like that's just going to click, but I'm not, you know, not trading for him. Would you spend your first overall waiver wire thing on him?
I probably would at this point just because we're past the trade deadline. There's not going to be a lot of other movement. There'll be September call-ups, but I don't know if there'll be any September call-up who's going to get more at-bats the rest of the season than Buxton, and definitely there won't be anyone who has a higher ceiling than him. Yeah. I agree with you. His value in, you know, in keeper leagues or for 2016 is much higher, but yeah, if you're interested in steals, then he's definitely someone to consider.
Yep. He's always a name worth paying attention to. Next, I wanted to bring up, I don't know how much fantasy value it has, but from Tuesday night, Clayton Kershaw battled the A's. He went 7 innings, 1 run, no decision. Had some trouble, some frustrations, very, very amped up pitcher. I don't know if you saw, it's hard to explain in a podcast, but more in video. He didn't get a call that he liked, and then he was frustrated, and he didn't get the strikeout he wanted. And then, infield hit, one of those really frustrating plays for a pitcher, kind of went towards third base, and I wouldn't even say that he messed it up. It was just a really hard play, and he wasn't able to make it. He spikes the ball into the ground, and then, picks it up and throws it into his dugout. Did you see this play, Fred?
Yeah, I did, and I think it's a good reminder that Clayton Kershaw might be the most competitive player in baseball. I mean, it gets overshadowed because of how incredibly talented he is, but he is an incredibly tough, intense competitor. And, you know, everyone who's been around him in his career talks about that. And uh-huh. This is someone who hates to lose, hates to underperform, even in a very small stretch of a game. And that's one of the things that makes him so great.
Yeah. Yeah. I was honestly surprised he didn't get ejected or a warning for throwing a ball off the field like that. But,
He's probably earned a bit of a leash with all his success in the last few years.
Yes, that'll happen. Is there anything to take fantasy wise from this?
No, I mean, he's the number one pitcher for any times we doubted him early in the season. Like, his second half is really expanded. His strikeout rate is better than it's ever been, which is just crazy. And, you know, his ERA is right around 2.00 since the start of the 2013 season. Like, that's a remarkable, this is going to be a remarkable 3-year stretch. He's a top 5 pick again next season in leagues.
Yeah. There's not much to take away from it. But, he still went 7 innings, 1 run against the A's. Got a no decision, but he's still pretty good. Okay. Let's talk about Alex Rodriguez. He's been in a bit of a funk, but he had a big game. He had his 25th career grand slam, extended his lead in that category. I heard today he has 50 home runs against the Twins and like at least 50 home runs against like 7 clubs or something. I don't know. I might have those numbers wrong, but it's just an incredible career, including those 25 grand slams. And it kind of surprised people this year because he, of course, missed last year and people thought he'd be washed up. And for much of the season, he's been a helpful contributor. That power is still there. What are you thinking about him going forward though? Where's Alex Rodriguez at for you right now?
Yeah, I think that this might actually be a bit of a time to buy low on Rodriguez because, you know, he was so, as you said, he was terrific for 4 months. In August, he's really struggled and he hit the grand slam last night, but in general, he hasn't, and I mean, we overreact to grand slams. So that's just a solo shot. It's not really that big of a deal. He went hitless again today. He drew a walk, but he hasn't played well in August. Is he hitting the wall? I'm inclined to say probably not, that maybe this is just a cold stretch. I mean, he hit 3 homers in 1 game not very long ago. I'm going to guess, you know, maybe about 3 weeks ago. So do you go from being able to hit 3 homers in a game to not even being able to rip out a few singles in this short amount of time? You know, maybe he's in a bit of a funk right now, but if I needed late season power, I consult his owner and say, hey, maybe this is the end of the line and, you know, you could pick up A-Rod at a discounted price right now.
Yep, you know, the thing with him, obviously it's not talent, it's just age. We're gonna watch him slowly decline. I don't think it's just gonna all of a sudden fall out from under him. Not running anymore, the average is gonna go down, but I could see him for the next couple of years or having these seasons where maybe he's a 250 hitter that still hits 30 home runs, 25 home runs, and it's not a superstar, but he's useful in pretty well all fantasy formats. And yeah, he's been cold now, but I mean, does he get drafted in mixed leagues next year?
Oh, I think he gets drafted, you know, unless he really bought it. I think he gets drafted in the first 10 rounds. I mean, it's hard to pass up on a possible 30 homer player the way home runs are going right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see him almost to make a broad reach, like a Mark Teixeira type, or maybe he's not hitting 300, you know, anymore, but the average comes down, but the power doesn't go anywhere. And it's, you know, guys with that much talent, especially in Yankee Stadium, you can still hit a bunch out. So, I agree with you. I still like A-Rod. Going forward. Another recent trade, Will Venable was traded from the Padres to the Rangers. Probably going to take the place of Josh Hamilton, who hasn't been that great. He's been, had his dramatics. They like to have him back, but he overall hasn't produced great there. Will Venable, been a streaky player, has shown flashes of great potential, struggles with lefties, but can certainly hit righties and have speed and whatnot. Do you like Will Venable now getting out of Petco Park?
Not to any great degree. Maybe if there was like a really clear opening in Texas, but like, as you said, without Hamilton, there's room for him to compete for playing time and get involved. But that's a pretty deep roster, and they have a lot of moving pieces kind of in the outfield. So I think he can play, you know, a few games, start a few games a week, come off the bench. I know you don't come off the bench quite as much in the American League, but I think, you know, maybe he's 15 team mix, but probably not even. And, you know, definitely not in other leagues. You know, maybe a little, the bigger story maybe is that him leaving San Diego, you know, clears some extra space for Melvin Upton to get a little bit more playing time. And he has hit okay lately. He's worth a look in deep leagues. I don't think he's done enough to help in shallow formats, but he is someone who, when he's playing well, can hit home runs and steal bases. And there aren't many players who can do that.
Yeah. Melvin, a really interesting player that was, you know, a good fantasy asset for a long time. And then just the bottom fell out really quick. And every once in a while, he shows the flashes of those potential, but he can't get on base at all. And he still swipes bases when he gets on. And every once in a while, he shows the power and runs into one. But it's hard to feel good about it, especially, you know, on the Padres and in San Diego. But he could get some playing time for sure. And then Travis Jankowski got called up, and it's unclear how they're going to use him. Do you have any interest in Jankowski?
No, I don't think so. I think they're probably more likely to give Upton a bit of a longer look, especially since he has the contract and it's late in the season. I mean, and, you know, with his brother Justin, you know, probably on his way out at the end of the year, they need to know what they have in Melvin, and is he a starting outfielder for them next year? Because he's being paid like one. Mm-hmm. So this is probably the time to give him the shot and see what he, you know, what he's made of right now.
For sure. And then last Saturday on August 15th, we'll figure out what this has to do with fantasy going forward, but Jackie Bradley Jr. had one of those insane games. You remember a couple years ago when Lonnie Chisenhall just put up about 1,000,000 points in one game, had like three
I do remember that, and then didn't really do much. I think that was early last year, and then didn't do much the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, Jackie Bradley Jr. had one of those games. He went 5-for-6, 2 homers, 3 doubles. 5 runs and 7 RBIs. For you guys in daily formats, I assume he won you some contests if you picked him. But he's one of those players, it's like, who's picking Jackie Bradley Jr.? He's known for his club and maybe getting on base, just not a guy that hits, but he ran into one. Does this change your opinion of Bradley Jr. fantasy-wise at all?
I'm going to say maybe slightly, just because playing time is a component of fantasy value. And obviously that kind of performance is going to leave an impact on his manager, and it's going to help him get in the lineup a little more. Plus, he plays exceptional defense.
Yes.
You know, Hanley Ramirez has the day off today. They are starting Diaz in left field. But, I mean, they're, like I mentioned with Venable in Texas, they have moving pieces in the outfield. Now, after a great hitting performance, and he's got the great glove, can he get his name into the lineup maybe 3 or 4 days a week, which probably doesn't factor into mixed leagues. It does in AL only. Does this get him a little more consideration for a bigger role next season? I mean, overall, it's not a big deal in the long term for fantasy, but you know, in an AL only league, it makes him a little more relevant the rest of the way because it probably gets him a little more playing time.
Yeah, and the scouting report on him was always obviously all defense, but maybe some on base skills. Not an on base monster, but maybe enough on base skills to make him useful. But not really much power, and honestly, not that much speed. So kind of a lower tier fantasy player. If you owned him for that game, congratulations, but I don't know that, you know, it's going to change his profile a lot, but worth some attention. Another guy that's not contributing as much anymore, Ichiro Suzuki, reached some milestones lately, which have been really interesting. He passed Ty Cobb on collective hits, if you count his hits in Japan. It's kind of a convoluted thing, and there's a lot of opinions going on there. But he's only about 80 hits away from having 3,000 in America alone. An incredible career. He's getting playing time in Miami, but overall had not a very impactful season in the box score. Is Ichiro useful for you at all in fantasy right now in 2015?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I think he's a Hall of Famer with what he's done in his career, but no, I think he's NL only at this point, and that's it.
Yeah, we all love to watch him play. What a great career, but I mean, he's not running. He's not even really collecting extra base hits. It's not a great lineup. They keep trotting him out there, and I think we want to see him play. But, you know, NL only just because he's getting at-bats, really. But, you know, worth keeping an eye on. He's saying he might come back, but not a lot to do there with fantasy. And another year, be another year older. Okay, and then to some bullpens. John Axford back at closer in Colorado. We were wondering about this last week, what exactly is going on there. It looks like Tommy Canley pitched his way out of it, it feels like. I'm not sure John Axford earned it back as much as Canley pitched his way out of it. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, while we're on the topic of closers, wanted to mention, you know, for our listeners, if you want to keep up with all the closer news, you know, all around baseball, go to the MLB.com closer report. That report is updated constantly. I mean, every day it's being checked. Every day it's being updated. It's got closers. It's got the next in line. It's got sleepers for saves for people in deep leagues. Like, that's the place to check. And if you're checking that, you'll notice that even when Axford lost his job, you know, we kept him on that threesome with the Rockies as someone who could get back into the mix. And as you said, Canely didn't pitch well enough to keep the job. That's not surprising. I mean, he didn't have a great track record when he was handed the job, and it did really feel like he was handed it more than earned it. And it kind of feels this way with Axford, where I believe, you know, the comment about him was that he had been pitching better and was back in, you know, back in form and ready to take the closer role back. When you look at his numbers in recent weeks, it doesn't really indicate that he is pitching better. Mm-hmm. It more indicates that that's just a positive spin his manager's putting on a switch more because he needs to take Canely out of the role. So, you know, right on that closer report, we'll put Axford up and Canely behind him, but then you still have Rafael Betancourt, you know, as a save sleeper. If Axford goes out and gives up three runs in his first saves opportunity, and they don't want to go right back to Canely, could it be Betancourt? And those are things that people in deep leagues need to keep track of.
Yep. The other thing I really like about our closer report is that it's tiered, and up at the top you have your elite closers that you know aren't going to lose their job anytime soon. Then as you go down, we've left the Rockies as an uncertain situation, which I think is a diplomatic way to describe it. Axford's the guy for saves right now. No matter your format, if you need saves, he's, you know, the first in line, but I wouldn't feel optimistic about him. You know, if you're desperate, obviously, if you're feeling okay about saves, you don't have to rush out and grab him, because I think the leash is short. He could pitch his way right out of that pretty quick, don't you think?
Sure, plus the damage he could do to your ratios in the process of getting you just very few saves. I think all those Rockies pitchers are, you know, NL-only material, and that's it. But you made a good point with the closer report. When listeners go there and check it out, if you're looking for save sleepers, it's best to search that report from the bottom up, because we've got uncertain save situations at the bottom. If you're going to pick up a setup man, you know, who's next in line, who could get a job, well, I mean, starting at the top of the list, you don't really want Aroldis Chapman setup man, because barring injury, you know, or a highly unlikely trade at this point, you know, he's not, that setup man's not going to get any save chances. You want to start at the bottom and look for a decent setup man in an uncertain role. That's the person who can move, who you can get ahead of everyone on your league on.
Yep, absolutely. And then, one other thing, David Wright's supposed to come back next week. Looking at the Mets, to me, I think that means less playing time for Juan Uribe, probably. That infield has also been kind of messy and busy too, but I think we can expect, as long as they're healthy, David Wright and Daniel Murphy to play just about every day, third and second, respectively. And David Wright's been a frustrating player in recent seasons, but has enough potential that has to be started in pretty well every format, right?
Yeah, I think I'm not that optimistic. I would say that in most mixed leagues, I would probably put him in the lineup. Actually, I probably wouldn't. I'd probably leave him on the bench for his first few games back and then take a look. I mean, if you think about in a lot of mixed leagues, Miguel Sano, for example, is a corner infielder, or even on waivers in some shallow formats. Well, with the way he's been hitting for power, are you going to take Wright fresh off this really long disabled list stint and expect him to produce right away? Or would you put maybe someone like Sano in and hope for homers in that first week? I think I'm going to make Wright earn his way back into my lineup if I'm a mixed league owner. Deep mix, I understand you probably put him in.
Yeah, you know, you've been hanging on to him.
Chase Headley or something like that. Yeah. Then you put him in. But shallow mixed leagues, I think I would rather just ride someone who's a hot hand and then see what Wright can do, because he could very well be rusty.
Yeah. If you've been holding on to him on the DL, you're probably in a league where you need him back. If you're in a shallower league where he's been dropped, you got to take the flyer on him though, right?
Yeah, bench, like that's the classic, you know, bench spot. Give him a bench spot. If he hits 300 the first week back, then put him in your lineup. Or you know, if the Mets are going into a series with the team with subpar starters, put him in your lineup. But I don't think he's like he was, where he's just, oh, he's back. Like when George Springer comes back, when Giancarlo Stanton comes back, those guys are going right in your lineup every league. No matter what. Yep. I don't think Wright's in that tier anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Got to keep an eye on him, but he's far from a lock. Let's look at some injuries also that have affected some of these guys lately. Wright's coming back. We got some guys that have been hurt. Yusiel Puig hurt his hamstring on Tuesday, but it's day-to-day, and so I would keep an eye on it, but apparently they did an MRI and there was no serious damage, so Puig owners can exhale. Looks like nothing real bad yet, but I mean, Puig was never running that much. He's a guy that's certainly fast, but As we know, stolen bases don't necessarily go hand in hand with speed, and it can be a manager decision or a team decision or even a player decision of whether they run, and that's never really been a big part of Puig's game, but you still never want to see this day-to-day stuff, especially on such a crowded roster. Are you worried about Puig at all on this hamstring?
I'm not worried about the hamstring as much as I am just his overall performance. I mean, yeah. He hasn't really been a mixed league worthy bat this year. He's getting by on reputation and promise. And this is the time of year where, you know, you need to turn your back on reputation and promise and go with players who are actually playing well. Mm-hmm. I think this maybe if you've been staying too optimistic on Puig, maybe this is your wake up call to bench him and make him earn his way back onto your lineup.
Yep. And make him show off that talent, which he certainly has, but hasn't lived up to this year. Another guy, Hunter Pence, is going to be out for a couple weeks with a left oblique injury, which is too bad because he was back and he was producing all right. He's had such trouble this year, and it's funny because he has been an Iron Man before 2015. I went and looked at the numbers. From 2008 to 2014, those 7 years, he averaged 158 games a year, and he played in all 162 in 2013 and 2014. Just one of the most dependable guys. And he's 32 years old and has just had trouble staying on the field this year. Are you worried about Hunter Pence? Obviously, he's out the next few weeks and he should contribute in September. But what about going into 2016? He's 32 years old now. Are you having second thoughts?
Yeah, it's time to take the durable tag off of him. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of maintained the philosophy that, you know, Major League Baseball players are durable until they're not.
Right.
And for all of them, a really good comparison would be Matt Kemp. He was so durable for like a 3 or 4 year stretch. And then there was a year where he was going, you know, first overall in some fantasy drafts. And one of the components that made him go so high was that he had played in, you know, almost every game for like 3 or 4 seasons in a row. And then now we definitely don't think of Matt Kemp. Yep. As durable. And I'm not saying Pence is going to go on exactly the same stretch, but we can take the durable tag off. That's no longer a credit towards him when you're drafting him.
Yeah. Still talented. I still like him for sure, obviously, in every format. He's going to be out a few weeks. What does this do in San Francisco? Because Angel Pagan was already out too, and Aoki's been a little bit banged up. That outfield's having a hard time. Where are you looking there in San Francisco?
Yeah, as of this morning, all three of those starting outfielders were on the disabled list. Aoki with the concussion, and he's supposed to be back very soon. Pagan, like, who knows? I mean, he's rehabbing, but he's never been a quick healer.
Uh-huh.
I'm really digging Gregor Blanco right now. I picked him up in every league basically that I could.
Uh-huh.
His career numbers are terrific. He gets on base really well. He can steal bases, and they're batting him leadoff, which means he can score runs. I really like him if that's the kind of profile of a player you're looking for, even in a mixed league.
Uh-huh.
He's going to have regular playing time at least for the rest of August and probably beyond. I mean, what are the odds that all three of those starting outfielders are back on the roster September 1st? Well, they won't be. Pence won't be.
Yeah.
This could be Blanco for a month before Pence gets back, for all we know, or Pagan could be delayed. I think he's really underrated. He's always someone who's played as well as starting players and just hasn't had a starting job. He's always had that high volume bench job.
Yeah, he's been a very good fourth outfielder that's never gotten the job, but now that he does, you know, he's very worth attention in your fantasy formats. Even mixed formats, you think he's just kind of fringy right there.
Yeah, I was, you know, really keen on picking him up, even in my mixed leagues. 10-team mix, I get that he's fringy, but, you know, 12-team, I would want to own him, and 15-team, I would invest in him, even if I had to, like, spend a little fab on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we like him there. Is there anything else in that outfield, though? Justin Maxwell?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Their team really could use an August trade for an outfielder, or even just someone serviceable, but, you know, who knows what direction they'll decide to go in.
Nothing you need to grab right now in your fantasy formats. Another injury, Billy Hamilton went down with a shoulder injury. It's unclear how long that's going to be right now, but they called it Brennan Bosch. I don't know if that means Brennan Bosch is going to get, you know, automatically all those starts. That's pretty fantasy irrelevant to you too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this was really disappointing news for a lot of owners with Hamilton going on the DL this afternoon. The best plan for owning Billy Hamilton this year was to draft him, use him to get a massive lead in steals, and then trade him to someone who really needs steals right around now. And hopefully those Hamilton owners did that. But, I mean, that was really – you don't need to win your steals category in a Roto League by 40 steals.
Yeah.
You use Hamilton to get 20 steals out in front of everyone else, and then you get rid of him for a power hitter or a high average hitter or a good pitcher. You know. But now if you were holding him kind of till right near your deadline, and your deadline's late August – you might not be able to do that now. We don't really know when he's going to be back, but you're probably not going to get much for him on the trade market.
I'm going to break rule number one. In my fantasy league, I'm dead last in steals, and if you're going to make a difference, that's the guy to target. Do exactly that. Try and get some points there. And I had a conversation with a Billy Hamilton owner, and he wanted too much, and we went back and forth, and he was stubborn, to his credit, and I finally caved, and I said, fine, I'll take Dexter Fowler. And we made the deal, and the deadline passed the other day, no more trades, and now I'm breathing a big sigh of relief. I did not pay the extra to get Billy Hamilton. Not that that would have been bad at the time, but I would have been pretty upset about it now if I had ponied up and paid for him.
Sure, I can even see the odd scenario where a fantasy owner might choose to cut him, depending on what the prognosis is and the expected return time. If it's 2 weeks, then I get that you keep him. But if you have a big steals lead, so then he isn't really holding much value for you anymore other than as a trade chip. Mm-hmm. And now that he's hurt, and like you could shop him around your league, but if you have a big steals league, what are you hanging on to him for when he comes back? You're probably not going to put him back in your lineup because he's not going to be getting you any of the statistics that you need.
Yeah.
You almost, I guess, just sell really low on him. Or maybe in a really shallow league, if nobody's willing to you know, pony up for him because he's going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks, if that's what it comes out to, you know, maybe you don't want to save the roster spot if you don't have DL slots. It's a tricky situation with him because he's such a unique player.
Yeah. There aren't that many options in the Reds outfield to replace him. One name that at least has a little bit of my attention, not Brendan Bosch. They've been using Jason Bourgeois out there. This is a journeyman guy who's never really done much at the major leagues. He's not exciting, but he can run. He can't run as fast as Billy Hamilton, obviously, but he can run as minor league steals. He's stolen, you know, bases in the major leagues, and nobody's noticed because he doesn't hit. He doesn't hit at all. He's kind of weirdly, in a purely fantasy sense, kind of a similar player to Billy Hamilton with his same pros and cons. Are you at all interested in Jason Bourgeois if you think he's going to start going forward?
Yeah, NL only, I'd say sure, but mixed, not even. He's not good against right-handers, and that probably will, you know, either limit his playing time or his effectiveness.
Yeah, it would have to break the right way. I have my eye on him. I'm not sure I'm picking him up, but if he goes the next week and steals five bases and they're using him, like, maybe. So in your deeper leagues, like, keep an eye on it, but I'm not sure what they're going to do in that mess of an outfield with him out. Glenn Perkins, again, back to the closer report and bullpens. He's having neck problems again, and this happened last year. Was great through most of the season and then gets derailed by neck problems. He was awesome for most of the year, and all of a sudden he's allowing runs, and this injury could be a good reason why. I'm going to get a cortisone shot. Not sure if he's going to hit the DL yet. How worried are you about Glenn Perkins?
Yeah, he's expected to rejoin the Twins tomorrow, you know, not in an active capacity, but just to return to the team. Mm-hmm. And they're not really sure, you know, what's going to happen with him. I'd say I'm concerned about it. And like you mentioned, this is the time for, you know, listeners to head straight to that closer report if you need saves, especially if you're a Perkins owner. But even if you need saves to see who's next in line, you're going to find Kevin Jepsen.
Yep.
Because that's the player that that manager Paul Molitor, you know, talked about today as probably the person who'd be getting saves while Perkins is out. And maybe that'll just be a save or two in the next few days. Perkins will be right back, or maybe it'll be longer. But, you know, Jepsen's the guy to pick up right now in mixed leagues. Hold him, get him in your lineup until Perkins comes back. You know, even when Perkins comes back, maybe put him on your bench for till you see Perkins throw two or three effective appearances and show that he's healthy.
Yep. Yeah, so keep an eye on that. That's frustrating down the stretch, again, second year in a row, because when he's on, he's been great, but something's not right right now. We mentioned Michael Franco out with a left wrist injury. Might be done for the season. The Phillies are not chasing the playoffs. I don't see them rushing a guy that could be a big part of their future. It's unclear yet if he'll be back a little bit in September. I would say in your standard leagues, wait for a little more information, but you might be dropping him. And then we talked about with Utley, is there any replacement here? Obviously not really a third base either, right? Not much to make from this other than pretty sad if you had Franco on your roster.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say he's a definite drop in mixed leagues, maybe in all leagues, because the Phillies have already acknowledged that he might be out for the season. Like you said, there's no real need to rush him back. And, you know, if he's not out for the season, let's say he comes back with 1 or 2 weeks left. Well, are you going to hold on to him this long until 1 or 2 weeks left and then get a guy coming off a wrist injury for the last week or two of the season? I don't think it's worth it. Unless you just have empty DL slots, I would let him go.
Yep.
It's just disappointing, and he'll be good next year, but let him go.
In your keeper formats, go ahead and throw him on the DL, and you're probably still going to hold on to him, you know, depending on how your league is set up. You know, still good for next year, but right now, that's too bad because he showed a lot of promise. He's doing well. And then Randall Grichuk is out with a right elbow injury, and who's more frustrated right now? Is it the Giants outfield or the Cardinals outfield? Because both are really banged up with a lot of their starters out. Grichuk's out, Holiday was already out, and Hayward has been day-to-day now, has some hamstring issues. So it's not a great situation in St. Louis right now.
No, and I think fantasy owners can look at Stephen Piscotty. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been hitting well. He's not hitting for power, but he's hitting for average. I think that's, you know, I believe he's hitting second in the lineup tonight. So that's a good sign. So I would look at him, you know, in 12-team leagues. I don't think I'd probably look at him yet in 10-team leagues. I'll look at him in 12-team leagues for sure. And he's almost has to get regular playing time for the next little while.
They're going to get him in there. They're going to get Brandon Moss in there, who's already, you know, getting starts. He should get plenty. And honestly, Brandon Moss slides to the outfield. And I think Mark Reynolds is starting a bunch at first base, which doesn't get anybody too excited. He's such a streaky power only player. It wouldn't blow me away if he hit like 4 home runs next week, but you're certainly not going to bet on it. You know, Mark Reynolds worth attention probably in your deep NL only, just if you're desperate for some power. But yeah, I like Piscotty. That profile is definitely hit tool. Not a lot of power, not a lot of speed, but if he hits over 300, don't be surprised. And Brandon Moss is Brandon Moss. There's some power to get from there too. But yeah, kind of a tough situation there. Even John Jay is out. Even their fourth outfielder is not starting. So kind of a tough situation. But NL only owners can take a peek, and definitely mixed league owners can think about Stephen Piscotty. Are you worried about Hayward in his hamstring?
Maybe, because steals are a part of his game. You know, you just have to hold your breath and hope that he's back in a couple of days. Then, you know, you breathe a sigh of relief and you see him steal a base. But he is someone where his legs are part of his value.
Mm-hmm. All right. You wrote another article this week, waiver wire targets, guys that you are specifically keeping an eye out for to pick up. We talked about this last week. Comes out every week at the fantasy page, MLB.com/fantasy. You list 10 per week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll take some of the really key ones and discuss them here.
Yeah. At the top of the list, Gregor Blanco. We already talked about how much we like him. He's hitting .296 on the year, 3 homers, 11 stolen bases, and 306 plate appearances. It can contribute all over the place. Now he gets regular time. Would you rather have, I came up with a list for you. We'll play this game. Would you rather have Gregor Blanco or Stephen Piscotty?
Yeah, I'll take Blanco just because I'm pretty sure I'm going to get the steals and the batting average could fluctuate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Piscotty more for average, but it is one of those fantasy categories that is kind of the toughest to bank on. It fluctuates the most, whereas Gregor Blanco running more than Piscotty, like, take that to the bank. That should happen. So I like them both, but Blanco going to give you those counting stats, and you can count on that. How about an interesting one for me, Michael A. Taylor. He's hitting .242, .285, .375. That's not very good. He hasn't been good at the plate. But he has 10 home runs and 15 stolen bases. I got to admit, I was surprised by this. I was looking this up. Did you have any idea he was racking up that many counting stats?
Yeah, that's kind of his profile, you know. Better, maybe a little better fantasy player than he is, you know, a real life, you know, major league asset. But I would rather have Blanco just because, you know, sure you'll lose out on a few homers, but it's not like you can really count on the homers for Taylor. They're kind of spotty. And, and he's, you know, Blanco's not going to drag down your batting average. And if Blanco had been starting all season, he would have a lot more steals than Taylor does.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe in the steals a little more than the power with Taylor. If I were going to just randomly off the top of my head and make another comparison, that reminds me of someone like Mike Cameron, who, you know, hit home runs, stole bases, but didn't really get on base.
Yeah, really
struggled at the plate, but can contribute, you know, with homers and steals, and he's getting starts over there. So Michael Taylor's interesting, but I like Blanco too. How about would you rather have Gregor Blanco or Anthony Goes with the Tigers? Another speed guy.
Yeah, I take Blanco in a heartbeat. Goes is not hitting for average, like, mm-hmm. at all, and he was hitting for average in April, May. So the fact that he's hitting .257 now is, when you factor in that he was hitting over 300, and well over 300 at one point, I believe,
cold.
In May.
Yeah.
Really cold. I don't think he's AL only for sure right now, and just a pure one category player.
Yeah, and he's bad against lefties, so much so that he often doesn't get those starts. He does have 19 stolen bases. I think he's useful in certain places, but I agree. I like Blanco more right now. And then my last comparison for you in the outfield, Gregor Blanco or Eddie Rosario for the Twins. He has 7 homers and 9 stolen bases, hitting .279. You have your eye on Rosario at all?
I think I prefer Blanco, especially because I think Blanco's going to hit leadoff all the time, and Rosario usually hits low in the lineup. So to me, that's, if Rosario was a leadoff hitter, then maybe I would, because he has had a pretty good debut this season. But that, you know, that stuff matters to me. I don't, I'm not going to let batting order spots factor into my decision making too much way back in April, because those are going to change over the season. But this time of year, you know, short time frame, that stuff matters.
Yeah. Eddie Rosario also is having a good year so far. You know, like I said, 7 homers, 9 steals. He actually, you know, has 9 triples, which is remarkable. I don't know how, you know, sustainable that is. But he's
put if Evan Gattis can hit 9 triples anyway.
That's true. Yeah, triples are a weird thing, and what's been dubbed the year of the triple. But Eddie Rosario has really weird home-away splits, and we see those in pitchers a lot, and we see him with crazy parks, but Target Field is a pitcher's park, you know, but not like this. Eddie Rosario at home this year is putting up a 963 OPS. That is awesome. Away from Target Field, Eddie Rosario has a 535 OPS. That is dreadful. Do you have any sort of explanation for this other than sample size? It's about 40 games in each one.
Yeah, I'm saying sample size, aberration. If I owned him, I don't think if he was at, if Coors Field was the home park, I'd say, okay, maybe he's someone to rotate in and out of your lineup. But I think this stuff just all normalizes. A good example is on the pitcher side would be Drew Hutchison. And everyone was going on earlier in the season about how great he was at home and how terrible he was on the road. Mm-hmm. And then around the end of July, early August, he rattled off a couple really poor starts at home. And I think some fantasy owners were saying, wait a minute, I thought every time he pitches at home, he's so good. Well, no, the fact that he pitches poorly when he's on the road is an indicator that maybe he's just not pitching that well. And he's been getting by sometimes at home. So I think with Rosario, you just even it out. It will even out.
Yeah, it's strange, but I don't see it as being sustainable going forward. All right, another name from your waiver wire targets list, Brock Holt, hitting 290 on the air as a pair of homers, 6 stolen bases. Kind of an average guy and also really helpful for his versatility. What do you like about Brock Holt?
Yeah, he was, his success on the weekend against the Mariners was kind of lost in the shadows of what Bradley did, where he had a really nice weekend. He's hitting second for the Red Sox. They have a pretty, you know, decent top of the lineup still with, you know, Mookie Betts and then Holt. Mm-hmm. And they've got, you've still got David Ortiz up in the top half of the lineup. Hanley Ramirez is in and out with injury, but he's around and in the lineup, he should be in the lineup a lot going forward. Mm-hmm. I think Holt's someone who, he'll just help a little bit, no power, but a little bit everywhere else until Pedroia gets back. And he's working his way back. But I think Holt's a nice short-term guy for mixed leagues who won't hurt you and will get runs and a few RBIs and the odd steal.
All right. Would you rather have Brock Holt or Chase Utley now with the Dodgers?
Yeah, I'll take Holt just because he's been hitting so much better than Utley this season. Even though I get that Utley could have a little surge here, a little, you know, inject of life on his new team, but I'll take Holt.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Would you ever rather Brock Holt or Utley's old teammate now, Odubel Herrera?
Yeah, if I'm chasing steals, I'll go Herrera. If I'm not chasing steals, I might go Holt. You know what? I'd say that's a pretty even one. I'm going to say I probably very slightly would go Herrera just because eventually Pedroia is expected back, and then that's going to push Holt back to the bench, whereas Herrera should be in the lineup all the time.
Yeah, they're pretty close, actually. Herrera has 6 homers, and I don't know how much I believe that. But, that's a pretty close one. I like that. How about a little less exciting, but still producing, Yan-Hervis Solarte? You like him or you like Brock Holt?
Yeah, I'll take Holt. Solarte, I don't really know what to make of him. I find he's streaky, doesn't really hit for average, doesn't have any speed at all. No. He hits the odd home run, but, I mean, are you really going to chase homers off a San Diego Padre, you know, super utility player? So I'd rather just take Holt.
Solarte is just one of the most boring options I can think of. And at the end of the year, he might have 11 homers. You're like, if you squint, you're like, yeah, there's some fantasy value in that. But there's not much upside to him, I guess is the point. How about his teammate, Jed Jerko, though, who does have upside and has been good in the past and then more recently has been bad since the start of last year. Kind of maybe turning some things around lately. He has 8 homers on the air and 290 PA. You like Jed Jerko at all?
I'm not a Jed Jerko guy. I would just go Holt because I'm not going to chase the few homers Jed Jerko is going to hit or hopefully will hit. I'm not going to live with the batting average and a total lack of speed.
Yeah, he's a player with a real downside. He could hit 275 for sure. I think he's capable, but if you're not careful, he'll hit, you know, 175. Could really tank you and be that bad. So I have my eye on him. Like, he's worth monitoring because there's significant, you know, power potential at second base, but I would go much safer at Brock Holt. And then last guy I talked about made this list before this trade, Enrique Hernandez, kind of losing his job. How about before the Chase Utley trade? Would you take Brock Holt or Enrique Hernandez?
Yeah, before the Chase Utley trade, I felt like they were quite similar.
Yeah.
And I might have taken Holt just slightly over Hernandez,
yeah.
Because I think his spot in the top of the lineup was a little more secure, but now I think Hernandez is droppable in, yeah, in mixed leagues.
Yeah, unfortunate. He was an interesting player there for about a week or two, and then that's disappeared. So Brock Holt, another guy. And then third one on your list that you like, Carlos Beltran. He's been showing off a little bit lately. He's at 271 with 13 homers and 354 plate appearances this year. That's not an all-star, but that's worth attention. What do you like about Carlos Beltran?
Yeah, he's hitting home runs lately, and we've seen this before. This is a super talented player who's just aging and not at his peak anymore. But sometimes players in that situation can gear it up and have really good stretches, and maybe we're seeing that from him right now in a, you know, hitter-friendly environment. He's hit a lot of home runs in recent games. If I needed power, I would go for it and just, you know, see how he does the next week or two.
Similar player. Done about the similar things. Different player. Stat line looks similar. Different ends of the career is what I'm trying to get at. Preston Tucker or Carlos Beltran?
I'd take Beltran and hope to, you know, ride the hot hand.
Yeah. You like Preston Tucker, though?
Yeah, I don't mind him. But and he kind of had his own little hot stretch at one point. But, yeah, I would take Beltran just because he's the one who's mashing right now.
Yep. How about for the Mets, young guy, Michael Conforto? Do you like him at all?
You know, long term, yes. Short term, not really. And that's a pretty crowded situation now.
Probably not ready yet.
Yeah, I think so. And he didn't show a lot of power, speed in the minors. He hasn't hit for average in the majors. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's NL only right now.
How about another Astro, Colby Rasmus?
Yeah, I would say I would rather Beltran, just because with Rasmus, you know, you're going to have to live with the low batting average to get the home runs.
Yep.
He hasn't had a high batting average in a really long time. Whereas with Beltran, I don't think you will necessarily have to live with that.
Yep, there's some upside there. It's a little bit of a trade-off. For me, they're close. Rasmus, a little more power. Beltran, much safer average. But it's close-ish. And then a guy, only 94 plate appearances, as of me writing this down, Franklin Gutierrez, set 307 with 7 homers and 94 PA. Obviously, he's not going to do that. But do you have your eyes on Franklin Gutierrez at all? And would you consider him over Carlos Beltran?
I wouldn't. It's like so long ago that I was first excited about a flash of good performance by Franklin Gutierrez that I can't even remember what year it was. You know what I mean? Like, I'd have to go back and look it up. I don't know if it was 2008 or something where I was first, or 2010 where I was first like, hey, this Franklin Gutierrez might be onto something. But he's had so many injuries, and, you know, like, I'm pulling for the guy as far as staying healthy and staying in the majors, but not to the point where I'd put him on a mixed league team yet.
Yeah. Yeah. What he's done so far is incredible, but it's literally less than 100 plate appearances. So keep an eye on him, but can't buy in yet. All right. Let's run through some pitchers. Those are a bunch of hitters. We're going to play pitcher ditch real quick for the upcoming weekend, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Fred, you tell me yes or no on these guys. Do you like Kyle Hendricks at home against Atlanta?
Yeah. Short term, I'll take him because Atlanta doesn't hit well, especially doesn't hit home runs well. Long term, I'm not feeling great about him, but I'll take him for this start.
Yeah. Atlanta did get Freddie Freeman back, but other than that, I'm still not worried about him. They're an exploitable team. How about Justin Verlander getting the Texas Rangers? He's started to maybe correct things.
Yeah, and he's a really interesting one because he's been pitching so well lately. But Texas, a lot of left-handed bats who are really good against right-handers. So what I'm going to say on Verlander is, if your ratios aren't that important to you, it's just with where you're in the standings, then start him. Or if you are, you know, lagging behind in general in your league and you just need to take a shot, you know, it's time to just put all your chips in and see what happens, then start him. If you're managing ratios, I'd be a little careful about this one, even if he's going to be good long-term the rest of the season. Like, Texas is a tough matchup for a right-hander.
Yep, yep. All right, how about Henry Owens? We talked about him last week, you know, this young lefty for the Red Sox. Last time out, he got Seattle. He allowed 7 runs in 6 innings, so that's bad, but he racked up 10 strikeouts. This guy has talent. He's going to get Kansas City on Friday. Tough matchup. What do you think there?
Yeah, definite ditch for me. The Royals are a scrappy offense. They don't strike out a ton, so I mean, he's had a lot of strikeouts so far, but I don't see him getting a lot in this game, and he hasn't been that effective, so, and he's kind of more of a 5-inning pitcher right now, so
yeah.
I'm out.
And then Drew Smyly returned on August 16th. He got Texas, and he allowed 5 runs in 4 innings. That's not so great. This time he gets Oakland. He's going to Oakland. Do you like that at all?
No, I'm going to ditch. I don't mind Smyly long-term, but he didn't look good on his rehab assignment, and he didn't look good in Texas. And Texas should have been a decent matchup for a left-handed pitcher, and he didn't do well at all. So I'm going to put him on my bench. I'm going to leave him there until he puts together at least one quality start, maybe two. And then I'm interested. I wouldn't cut him. He's been really good with Tampa Bay, but I'm not pitching him until I see something good from him.
Yep, absolutely. I'm in that situation now, and I'm not feeling good about him just yet. Saturday, the 22nd, your boy Luis Severino is going to Cleveland. You believed in him last time going to Toronto, and he managed a quality start. The minimum for it, 6 innings and 3 runs, but he racked up 9 strikeouts in Toronto, too. If you trusted him in Toronto and he didn't get blown up, you're going to take him in Cleveland?
Yeah, for sure. And the one reason I wanted to mention him today, if someone didn't watch the game, they see the stat line, they see 6 innings, 3 earned runs. What happened in that game is in an inning, he had 2 outs, a fly ball was hit to Carlos Beltran, he loses it in the sun and doesn't catch it. If he catches that ball, and it's a lazy fly ball, then the inning's over. Mm-hmm. Beltran doesn't catch it. The next batter was Josh Donaldson. He got on base. The next batter is Batista. He hits a 3-run homer. Yeah. If Beltran catches that ball, we might be talking about 6 shutout innings with 9 strikeouts in Toronto.
Right.
And, you know, that's a totally – now there's a huge buzz about him. So I was encouraged by that effective outing against a really good offense in a tough park. So I'm sticking with him.
Makes his ERA look worse than his actual talent. That makes him a little sneaky going to Cleveland. Like that. And that's a much better matchup for him. How about Chris Tillman has been a perplexing pitcher this year. He's about to go up against the Twins, which is a good matchup for him. He was doing well, then he was a little bit hurt, and then he came back and was bad, and now he's looking okay. Only 3 strikeouts in 7 innings last time. Do you like him in this one start against the Twins?
Yeah, I think I'd take him just because, as you said, he's pitched well in the second half without, you know, having in front of me who's pitching for the Twins in that game. Doesn't really matter that much because the Twins don't have an ace, so they don't have anyone who you say, oh, I don't want to use Tillman because he's probably going to have a hard time getting a win against that guy. So, I mean, decent chance to get a win, good team. Twins aren't, you know, Orioles are playing pretty well, hitting pretty well. Twins aren't. Yeah, I'd go with him.
For the record, scheduled to match up against Kyle Gibson, who is also pretty inconsistent.
For sure.
But that struggling Twins bullpen, I don't know, he has enough run support behind him. Chris Tillman's interesting, for sure. How about Joe Ross? He gets to the Brewers. Joe Ross had been awesome for a lot of the year. Has amazing peripherals, really good strikeout-to-walk numbers. But then he's allowed 9 runs in his past 2 starts. Might be cooling off a little bit after being a little over his head. Do you like Joe Ross against the Brewers?
I'd say 15-team league, I'd use him. 12-team league, he's kind of like Verlander we were talking about for Friday. Is, you know, if I'm not super worried about my ratios, yeah, I go ahead and use him. If I'm protecting those ratios, then I probably bench him and want to see him have one good start because, as you said, he hasn't pitched well recently, and I believe the last start was in San Francisco, which I know they're a decent lineup, but it's a good pitcher-friendly park, and he wasn't good. Mm-hmm. It's late in the season. He's a young player. I might want to see him prove it once before I put him back in.
Yeah. And then finally for Saturday, Justin Nicolino of the Marlins gets the Phillies. That's a good matchup. The Phillies are relatively punchless, especially they've lost Utley, they've lost Michael Franco. Nicolino has a 4.24 ERA and a 1.33 whip in 4 starts. That's not great, but it's not awful. But he has 7 strikeouts to 6 walks in 23 1/3 innings. What can you tell me about Nicolino, and would you consider him in this good matchup?
Yeah, I would bench him in every mixed league for a couple reasons. One is that the Phillies lineup, even though they aren't strong, they are better against left-handers. So a little better against lefties, you know, it's righties that you really want to target the Phillies with. But the bigger reason is the 7 strikeouts in 23 1/3 innings. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's only expected to get you like 2 strikeouts in that start, like what's really the point? His ratios aren't very good. You're kind of maybe chasing a win at that point.
Right.
So, and he doesn't, you're necessarily going to go deep into the game. So I just don't see really what – it's not worth the risk.
Yeah, not a lot of upside there. Do you like him in general going forward? Any upside as a pitcher?
Yeah, 2016 I'm interested, but 2015 not really.
Yep. All right, and then Sunday in Miami again, this time Nola going down there. Do you like that? He's a 4.41 ERA, 1.27 whip, 28 to 10 strikeouts to walks. He's a guy with a little bit more hype around him, and he's been doing okay so far, not great.
Yeah, I would probably use him against the Marlins. the Marlins, you know, aren't a good, are the, they're the worst lineup in baseball against right-handers. They've been okay this week, but I mean, in general.
Yeah.
Like, they have the lowest OPS in baseball against righties. You know, he's going to a pitcher-friendly park. I'd go for it.
Yep. I'm fine with that too. How about Kevin Gausman, another guy that's been frustrating, has a bunch of talent. I'm quite seeing it. He gets that same matchup that Tillman does. He gets the Twins. You like Kevin Gausman?
I would use him in a deeper mixed league. He was fine last time out against the Mets. Not awesome, but not terrible. And that's kind of where he's been so far. He's been better at home, I believe. I don't have that in front of me, but I believe he's been better at home this year. I would use him in a deeper mixed league, or if I was chasing that win, which is okay to do maybe late in the season, and hope he gets a win against the Twins.
Yep. And then last name, we mentioned him before, Colin Ray gets the Cardinals. Last time out, he got Atlanta, and he held them to 2 runs. Now he gets the banged-up Cardinals, who are missing a bunch of players. You like Colin Ray at home against them?
Yeah, deep mixed league, I would go for it. I mean, he's at home. He's at Petco. He's had 2 solid starts. Nothing spectacular, but solid starts. I don't know if he'll get a win or not. Really, the Cardinals don't lose a lot of games. And, you know, and they, like, they have a pretty good pitching staff and bullpen. But 15-team league, I would look at it. I'll mention in Tout Wars this week, I didn't pick him up for the 2-start week, and neither did anyone else. I thought somebody would because just chasing wins late in the season. But nobody did, and any of us could have gotten a win in that Braves game because he came out with one. But shallow leagues, no. Deep leagues, yes.
Yeah. All right. So that's our pitcher ditch. Let's take a quick look at the week ahead, too. Some other guys that have some 2-start weeks. If you're playing in a weekly format, which is pretty popular, got to lock these guys in by the end of the weekend for next week. Start with Robbie Ray. He gets the Cardinals and the A's both at home. Robbie Ray's been good so far. Are you in on Robbie Ray in general and for next week?
Yeah, interesting schedule quirk next week where both Robbie Ray and Patrick Corbin will be pitching at home twice if schedule holds against the Cardinals and the A's. Both of those teams are in the bottom 10 teams in baseball in OPS against lefties. So, you know, nice 2 left-handers. I know it's not a pitcher-friendly park, but they pitch in it all the time. And, you know, and they've got a good matchup, especially since the better of those 2 teams, the Cardinals, is missing a lot of players. So I would be interested in both of them. Ray hasn't been good lately, and you worry about him maybe wearing down late in the season. So I would say with Ray, I'd want to see how he does tonight against the Pirates. You know, they're going right now as we're recording. And Corbin, though, I'm definitely in on.
Yeah, I like both of them. I think the D-backs are kind of lousy, but I like those guys. There's some upside in that rotation. Also, Ruby De La Rosa. They basically, in the preseason, I don't know if you remember, they had about approximately 13 guys that were candidates for the rotation. And I guess the strategy is that some of them would filter up and be kind of interesting, and that happened. They have some intriguing arms. Not great arms, but intriguing arms, including Ray and Corbin and De La Rosa. So I agree. I like both of them. How about Nate Eovaldi, who on Wednesday took a perfect game into the 4th or 5th or so, and then the wheels fell off a little bit against the Twins, but he was still pretty good. Do you like Nate Eovaldi? He gets Houston and then goes to Atlanta next week.
Yeah, I'm feeling really good about him. He has pitched really well across his last 11 starts, which dates back into June now. So he's put together a really nice stretch. Today, you know, 120 pitches, 8 strikeouts, 7 innings. That's really good start. Uh-huh. He gets the Astros next week at home. The Astros don't hit nearly as well on the road. They also strike out a lot. Then he goes to Turner Field, pitcher-friendly park, to face a Braves team without any power. I'm using Eovaldi even in shallow leagues next week.
Yeah, I like him. He was also, I mean, I know the pitch effects numbers can vary in terms of radar guns and stadiums, but he was hitting 102 on Wednesday by some counts. Even if that's not 100% accurate, which it may be, whatever he was hitting was pretty high. He's throwing gas, for sure, which he always does, but maybe reaching some new heights. And then Nate Karns, who is a favorite of mine, actually. He gets Minnesota, and he gets Kansas City. I like the Minnesota. I don't like the Kansas City. What are you thinking about Nate Karns next week?
Yeah, I'm thinking deep mixed leagues. You know, I'm interested because it's 2 home matchups. Mm-hmm. He's got a good defense behind him. As you said, the Twins are a good matchup. The Royals aren't a great matchup because they'll kind of really peck away at him. They don't really live by the home run ball anyway, so playing in Tampa might not matter to them that much. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say in most leagues I probably use him. He has been pretty effective this year. Whip's a little high, so if you're really worried about your whip, then maybe I wouldn't. But other than that, I think I would.
Yep. And then we're going to look at some hitters, some teams that have good matchups next week, also depending on where they're going. Maybe you want to target some guys from here. Starting with the Mets, not a team that you are always, you know, really excited about lineup-wise, but they get to go to Philadelphia, and then they're going to host Boston. Is there anybody on the Mets roster that really jumps out to you?
Yeah, I think this is a chance. Maybe if you've been wavering on Lucas Duda, you know, like in a shallow league, I'd say stick with him right now, especially because preceding those two matchups, they're in Colorado this weekend. Mm-hmm. So there's a nice little week and a half stretch in Colorado, in Philadelphia, home against a Red Sox team that doesn't have good starting pitching, has an unsettled bullpen. So, you know, I would make sure Duda, Granderson, you know, are in the lineups. And always, if you're in all leagues, if you're dealing with an unproductive catcher spot, maybe you're sick of Steven Vogt or Matt Wieters, maybe you look at Travis d'Arnaud for next week.
Yep, I could see that. I like Granderson for sure. There's some upside there in that lineup, absolutely. How about the Chicago White Sox, who were real bad through the whole first half, have shown signs of life. There's talent on that team, and it hadn't really lived up to expectations. They get Boston, and they get Seattle, and they might miss Felix Hernandez. Do you like any White Sox specifically for next week?
Yeah, the White Sox are interesting because they have a lot of kind of fringy mixed league type hitters. You know, Adam Eaton gets into a lot of mixed leagues, but not all of them. He's someone you want in your lineup next week. Melky Cabrera was hot. He's cooled off a little bit, but, you know, he's kind of fringy. He doesn't hit a lot of power, a lot of speed. So, you know, you could look to put him in your lineup for next week. So I think those kinds of players you want to get active in all leagues. Maybe in a really deep league, you take your shot at Adam LaRoche, who hasn't had a good season at all, but you hope maybe he could run into a couple balls and a couple homers across that stretch. You'd have to, you know, look maybe a little more at how many lefties they end up facing when the schedule really shakes down. But this is a chance for them. You know, they haven't had a good offense all year, but they have been a little better in the second half, like a decent amount better. So this is a team maybe to look at if you need a short-term hitter.
Yep, I can see that. And then finally, last team we're going to talk about, your favorite, Toronto Blue Jays, coming over the border. They're going to Texas, and then they'll be at home against Detroit. Most of these really good Toronto hitters are probably owned, but whether it's in DFS or just any way you can get your hands on them and utilize them, who do you like from the Blue Jays lineup next week?
Yeah, I mean, Russell Martin's had a really poor second half, but maybe this good matchup is enough to keep him, to get him back on track. He does look a little banged up, so, but I mean, if you've been using him through the cold stretch, keep him in your lineup for this time. And then you could look at, you know, Kevin Pillar has really been struggling, but the Blue Jays are supposed to face three left-handers in that stretch next week. He hits lefties a little better, so maybe you take a little more of a look at him. Ben Revere doesn't hit lefties quite as well, but if the lineup's cooking because they're the best team in baseball by a mile against left-handers this year, you know, and you need steals, keep Revere in your lineup because he has been not great since he's been with the Blue Jays. So I think those kinds of players, Chris Colabello in deep leagues, obviously the top half of the lineup is going to be active in every league.
Yeah. They're known to score runs, and they should be able to do that in Texas and at home against Detroit. So hopefully you can utilize some of them next week or some of those other guys looking ahead before we come back for another episode next week. Once again, we've run long and haven't got the Twitter questions. So we always put it at the end here in case we get time, and we don't. You and I have been verbose, but hopefully that is helpful of what we've been able to talk about and keep you guys up to date and look ahead. Fred, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'll mention a couple things. Just going to mention the closer report one more time. I know we mentioned it a couple times earlier in the show, but late season saves are just so big in, you know, in fantasy leagues. So if you're looking at who to stash, hit that closer report right now and start looking at who's next in line behind the shaky closers and pick those players up. And, you know, that's the first, when you hear Glenn Perkins, you know, neck injury, that's the first place like the fantasy owners should be going. Like that's a page you have to bookmark. Mm-hmm. You hear closer injury and automatically if you're good fantasy owner, the light bulb should go on, say, I'm going to the closer report. I'm going to see who's next in line behind that player,
yep,
you know, and who to get in my league. And just also wanted to mention with the Twitter questions, we didn't get to them, you know, here in the podcast, but we got to over 100 of them in the chat session on Tuesday at 3 p.m. And that'll be taking place, you know, again next Tuesday. So if you've got keeper questions for next season, late season trade questions, you know, waiver wire questions, lineup questions for the stretch here, you know, put the questions in on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday morning, or get on there right at 3 p.m. and start putting them in, and you'll get your answers quick, short answers and the help you need with your teams.
Yep, that's found over at the fantasy page, mlb.com/fantasy. Even if you didn't ask a question, you can go read the whole transcript of some of them, and sometimes reading it, even if it's not your question, you can learn something based on what somebody else asked. And then, yeah, holler at us and make sure must follow at fantasy411, tweet and answers to all those questions, and then just stuff every day. You know, some good updates on there, keep you up to date on what's going on. That's the place to go. at fantasy411 and MLB.com/fantasy. Fred and I and a whole great team of people help keep that running, so that should be helpful for you guys. All right, for Fred, I'm Dylan. That should do it for us. We'll be back with you guys next week. Help you guys getting ready for September, which is like the one last final shakeup heading in down the stretch run where a lot of stuff can happen. So we'll be back next week with another episode, and we'll talk to you then.